speaker spoke up and said, the loudspeaker spoke up and said, the loudspeaker spoke up and said, the loudspeaker spoke up and said, Christianity is stupid. Christianity is stupid. Christianity is stupid.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Our Podcast Could Be Your Life. We are in the smoldering crater of swimming in the mainstream is such a lame dream month, and back. We are back on that SST Records trip.
Oh, yeah.
Talking about Negative Land.
Uh-huh.
My name is Caroline.
I'm Jeff.
And here we go.
Here we go.
I fucked the order up. I don't care. This guy's from England, and who gives a shit?
That's right. Never lose sight of that.
Exactly.
We felt it appropriate to do Negative Land in light of the passing of Richard Lyons on the same day as Prince.
At the same age, too. Yeah.
Oh, shit. You're right. Mm-hmm. I didn't even notice that. Obviously, a sad thing. Didn't get as much attention as Prince did, but I cared.
Yeah, I did too. Negative Land were a minor obsession for me for a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know, but they were there. I didn't know you were ever a big Negative Land fangirl.
Sure.
Well, that's neat.
I never read that book, though. I always wanted to.
What book?
The story of the letter U and the numeral 2.
Oh. yeah, I haven't read that either. Well, hopefully you'll have lots of interesting things to say about these records.
I hope so. I'll do my best.
Because I have to admit, I find Negative Land a bit confounding at times. Like,
oh, yeah.
I don't always get what they're doing, you know?
I think they're best when they have a really solid concept
that they're building around. I would probably agree with that. Although, you know, maybe not, actually, because Escape from Noise, I don't know if that has any sort of particular overarching thing to it. And that's one of their, maybe their best record, I don't know. Am I wrong? What do you think?
No, I don't think you're wrong.
Okay. You were very silent, and it seemed silently saying I was wrong.
I was listening.
Okay.
I mean, I think that it has a minor concept of just, like, American society.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those.
Well, I mean,
holding a mirror.
Sure, sure.
Well, they were the American Beauty of 1987.
Well, isn't all of Negative Land about American society, basically?
Yeah, but I think sometimes, I mean, certainly on the subsequent record, they really zeroed in on a certain concept.
Sure, sure.
But, yeah.
So, if you're unfamiliar with Negative Land, they are not so much a band as a kind of conceptual art project of sorts.
Yeah, they use the sound as their medium.
Right. They take clippings from all kinds of different sources, talk radio shows, television programs, other stuff. just lots of a lot of like spoken word bits and just interesting bits of sound, and sort of use them in a way that critiques this crazy country we live in.
Sure.
The holding a mirror up to society, sure.
I mean, we say that as a joke, but I do think that that's what they're trying to do.
Well, yeah, absolutely. I might compare them a bit to Throbbing Gristle.
On their first album, they're pretty much trying to be Throbbing Gristle, because they were teenagers, and that's kind of what you do when you're making music as a teenager. You're like, I want to be like this band.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly on their first few records, it's right in there. but Negative Land always had a... They had a real good sense of humor, you know?
Yeah.
They had a very sly kind of wit and a very, like, sarcastic sort of sensibility. Whereas Throbbing Gristle thinks just, like, playing tapes of serial killers is profound in some way.
Sure.
It's not, but, you know, that's it's another subject for another day.
We already did a Throbbing Gristle.
Yeah, that's true. So. Yeah.
I would also compare Negative Land a lot to Nurse with Wound, because...
Like, sound-wise, or...?
Yeah, well, both sound-wise and, yeah, pretty much. And, like, their first couple records, they're definitely trying to be like Throbbing Gristle, but they sound more like Nurse with Wound.
Mm-hmm.
And, even on their later work, like, there's a sample on Dyspepsy that we'll talk about that I find... very unsettling that they use, and it is very similar to the way Stephen Stapleton will use samples. Like, he has a less, like, pointed satirical bent, but he definitely does have a sense of humor and a playfulness to the way that he composes these sound collages that definitely stuck out to me re-listening to these records.
So you had a minor Negative Land obsession.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I was like 19, I wasn't working, and I wasn't really in school, and I had to be obsessed with something. And, yeah, so Negative...
that's your whole explanation.
Yeah. yeah, I took a year off from college when I was like 19, because I had mental health issues, and big fucking surprise, right? So I got very into like Nurse with Wound at that point, and very into like Free Improv, and Negative Land were in the mix too, and yeah, they're great.
All right.
I don't know if you have a particular story with them.
No, not really. They,
don't you have one of their albums on vinyl?
I do have Helter Stupid on vinyl, yes.
Yeah,
which I'm proud of. But no particular origin story with Negative Land. They were always a group that kind of fascinated me in theory, like, because they sound very cool, you know. Like,
yeah.
in describing them, I mean, they are cool, but especially in theory, they're cool. But yeah, I mean, that's, like I said, no real big story with Negative Land. They are an interesting group, a group that I admire in a lot of ways. Not necessarily something you just throw on for pleasure listening or whatever, but
yeah,
you know, they're there.
Mm-hmm.
They're cool. I like.
Have you ever heard the a cappella Negative Land covers album?
No.
By a group called the 180 G's.
No.
It is fucking incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just this a cappella group doing Negative Land.
So, like, what songs did they do?
They did, the one I definitely remember is Playboy Channel.
Okay.
And that was really funny. So
like, do they do, like, the, like, noises and shit? Like,
yeah.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
It is amazing. Definitely check that out. I want everybody to be on that 180 G's tip.
You know who else I'd compare Negative Land to?
Who?
Favorably.
Yes, who?
The Residents.
Oh, yeah, big time.
That's the thing is like, the Residents sort of get billed as being satirical, and I guess they kind of are.
Yeah.
I mean, like, Third Rock and Roll.
I think that they try to do other stuff. Like, I would say their most satirical work is Third Reich and Roll.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know if I would, like, call them straight up, like, a satirical band the way that I would with Negative Land.
Right. So I guess we can talk about these here albums.
Mm-hmm.
The first self-titled album. You know, we can probably talk about the first two in tandem, yeah. I think.
Yeah, because they were really young when they made it.
Yeah.
When they made both of them, and I think that they didn't know what they wanted to do yet. Like, it wasn't there yet.
Mm-hmm.
It was very much like, we're 17-year-old and we're really into Throbbing Gristle, and we want to make stuff that's like that, and they don't really hit the mark because they're young.
For the most part, no. So these first two albums, the self-titled and Points. The first album is 20 tracks, and most of them are, you know, a minute long, if that.
Right.
How would you describe the sound of this record?
I mean, basically, like, baby Throbbing Gristle. Like, it's just not quite as dark. There's a lot of bleep, bloop.
Yeah, it's definitely not as, like, oppressive sounding as Throbbing Gristle is.
Because they're from sunny San Francisco instead of fucking, you know, toxic wasteland Manchester, Northern England.
Right.
No offense to our... Our northern listeners.
Manchester listeners.
Yeah, or from, you know, Northern England generally. No offense. Mm. Because I have a professor who's from Northern England, and he's cool, and he's on a book tour with Tom DeLonge, which is stupid, but I'm proud of him.
He's on a book tour. Oh, yeah, I think you mentioned that.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. But
well, you know what? A man's got to eat.
Sure. But, you know, can you really feel good about yourself on a tour with Tom DeLonge?
Well, I think he likes him.
That can't be right.
Why?
Because no one likes Tom DeLonge.
Well, like, you know, if they have some kind of working relationship, I'm sure that he thinks he's okay at least.
I guess. I don't know.
I haven't talked to him in a while.
Isn't he kind of like a aliens or like
that's
controlling
whole,
us all guy?
That's his whole thing. Like, and this book that he and this professor of mine like co-wrote, ghost wrote, whatever the fuck. He like thinks that that's real as shit. Huh. I don't think my professor does. I think this is just like he's writing a cool science fiction book because he's a writer. And clackety-clack, he's going to write stuff. But Tom DeLonge thinks that this shit is super real.
Isn't that potentially an exploitative relationship then?
Yes. on whose part?
On the professor's part.
Why?
He's taking advantage of Tom DeLonge's weird delusions to make money?
No, I think that from what I know, I feel like it's kind of like you could take it either way. That's kind of the idea of it. Mm. So you could take it either way. And also, like, my professor, he's just doing a job, man. He's got a family. He's gotta make that paper like the rest of us.
All right. Fair enough.
Don't worry. Tom DeLonge is doing fine. He's got those boxcar racer residuals out the ass. So, he's fine.
He's getting those sweet zids. But yeah, the self-titled Negative Land. Yeah, like, it is sort of like a sunnier Throbbing Gristle. I mean, I don't want to give the impression that this is, like, a real happy record, because it's
not. Yeah, because it's not, but, like, y'all know what we mean, because there's such a cultural difference between the United States and the UK, and there's an even larger cultural difference between, like, the San Francisco Bay Area and Manchester.
Sure.
And so the references that they're working with are going to naturally be different. Like, they're making that Throbbing Gristle sound, but, like, the sounds that surround you constantly are going to be a lot different than, like, what Genesis P. Orridge and company were, like, inundated with in their shithole country.
Apologize to UK listeners.
I'm sorry, UK listeners. Y'all know I love Peep Show, so don't worry about it. And also, like, I love your country, and if I could live there, I probably would, but I can't because I can't afford it. I don't have any friends there, And also, I'm going into the legal field, so it wouldn't make sense, because, like, I don't want to go to your place where everybody has to wear a curly wig.
That's true.
I don't even know if you got...
Do they still do that over there?
Of course they do. The
curly wigs?
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
I don't know. Like, nobody told them they could stop.
What a fucked up country, man.
I know. y'all got paralegals over there?
I'm sure they have paralegals over there.
I don't know. It's a different system. It's a much smaller country. They got less shit to do.
It's a different world.
Yeah, it's a different world from where you come from.
Yeah, this album is not, it's got a lot less samples than their later work does. Definitely.
Yeah, like it's not very memorable.
Yeah.
Neither of them are very memorable, although right. I would say that Points is better.
I would actually disagree, because Points, for one thing, it's got half as many songs, mm-hmm. which means all the songs are a lot longer.
True.
And, those songs are pretty boring for the most part. So when you get a boring song, you're stuck with it for like 5 minutes of just like scraping noises and like some static and, you know, not a whole lot interesting going on. At least with the first album, you know, it's usually over in a minute and then some other like weird thing is happening. I can pretty much sit down and play the first Negative Land album and basically enjoy it, if not, like, you know, feel all that much about it or respond to it, really. But Points is kind of a slog for me, though. Like, most of it is really boring and not in a cool way.
What's boring in a cool way to you?
Well, take, for instance, the band that Negative Land got their name from.
Annoy are never bored. They lock in on that groove, buddy, and you're grooving along with them.
Sure.
That's how I feel.
Yeah, Annoy, not much of an audible influence on this music.
I know, that's why it is interesting that they named both their band and their record label after Annoy songs.
Well, actually, maybe the more ambient tracks on the Annoy records kind of sound like these early Negative Land records.
Yeah, I guess.
When you say so.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can enjoy stuff that you don't necessarily are influenced by.
Well, sure.
But.
I guess.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything or not do anything. You're just here. The one thing in this world that keeps me from having freedom.
The one thing, Joe?
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as I can tell, no one really likes these first two albums, or at least not that much.
Yeah.
They're certainly not, like, the good stuff.
Yeah, these guys weren't, like, the silver chair of the experimental music community. Do you know my silver chair story?
I seem to remember you having one, but I can't remember what it is.
Okay, so I have a brother who's like 20 years older than me, and when I was 4 and I wasn't good at talking yet, that was around the time that Frog Stomp by Silverchair came out.
Sure.
And my brother would be like, say Frog Stomp by Silverchair, like say that phrase. And so I did it. He never got tired of it.
That is a beautifully 90s story.
I know, right?
What song did Silverchair do?
I don't know. That's
they did
question.
That, like, fat boy song.
Did that have an appearance by the Fat Boys?
That was a lost opportunity for, you know, an era-defining collaboration between the rock and hip-hop worlds.
They were disorderlies, right? Is that the Fat Boys?
The Fat Boys?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I'm looking it up. I already have Wikipedia open.
I know they were a hip-hop group. But yeah, that could have been the Aerosmith and Run DMC of the 90s. Silverchair and the Fat Boys.
Yeah.
It's too bad that didn't happen.
Bam. Disorderly's Fat Boys. I was right.
All
right. And Ralph Bellamy.
Is he related to Bill Bellamy?
Probably.
Because if he isn't, I don't give a shit. Anyway. So, next we have a big 10-8 place. 1983.
Yeah. Now we're getting somewhere.
This is an interesting record.
Yeah.
Still not especially coherent.
Yeah, but they're definitely developing their sound. This is definitely like recognizably them.
Oh yeah, yeah. This is I'd say this is the first like Negative album proper that like, you know.
Yeah.
You can connect of a piece with their later material.
I tell you what, you get a nice little song in here, Four Fingers.
That's true. The first of many acoustic ditties that Negative Land would sprinkle.
They're good at that. I'm glad that's not like their thing that they do, but do it well when they lay it on you.
It does sort of, you know, help break up the albums a little bit when you're kind of getting tired of like, you know, layered fucking samples and with echo effects on them and shit.
Sure.
Then you get a nice little acoustic ditty and you're good to listen to more talk samples with, you know, reverb on them.
Yeah. Throw some reverb on it, babe.
Exactly. Okay, so the first half of this album I'm still kind of confused by.
How do you mean?
Well, I don't necessarily know what they're doing, like I said before. I don't get what are you doing, guys? That's what I want to say to them.
It has something to do with like CB radio.
Okay. I know that's an interest of theirs.
It would have to be almost. Right.
But the second half is interesting, this sort of travelogue that we get cruising all up and down California.
Yeah, it's like Songs for the Deaf.
Yeah, exactly. It is exactly like Songs for the Deaf.
Yep. Very sexy music, this.
Yeah, so I think 180G Part 2 is probably the centerpiece here.
Yeah.
Whereas the first part, not so much.
I do like Clowns and Ballerinas a little bit.
Well, you
know. It's kind of cute.
I guess.
I got it stuck in my head.
Clowns and Ballerinas.
Clowns and Ballerinas here and there.
I mean, well, what do you think? I mean, do you like this album more than I do?
No, I actually, re-listening to it, I was surprised by how I didn't like this album as much as I kind of assumed I did. Because, again, like, it doesn't feel very cohesive. That's what I want from my Negative Land a little bit. Like, I mean, on Escape from Noise, it's not the most cohesive, but, like, the songs are better, I guess. Like, the samples are more interesting and all that shit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, in this one, it's kind of like, I guess it's fine. I mean, I enjoy it when I listen to it, but it's not. They're not where I want them to be yet.
Yeah, I don't know though. I really do like that part two though. Like,
that is good.
Very sort of amusing, like sarcastic trip up and down California. You know,
sure.
That's definitely something I'd recommend checking out. The audience.
You been to California?
I have, yeah.
Well, I haven't.
I've been to LA once and San Francisco once.
I haven't been any of those places. I'm sure they're nice.
Yeah, I haven't been in 10 years, though, so...
A lot has changed.
Yep. Probably everything's way different now. I think you laughed harder at that than
That it warrants it. Yeah, I know, but I was just thinking of, that boat needs to be way bigger. I don't know. I'm really stupid.
Stop it. Yeah, I don't know. I don't have much to say about this, honestly. Like right. I said, I'm sort of confounded by Negative Land at times, and like I don't properly understand how to contextualize their music exactly. And there's not really a wealth of critical commentary out there about it either. So,
that's like, true, which is interesting. Like, you would think that academia would be fucking lousy with Negative Land.
Well, even like, you know, popular criticism.
Yeah.
They're not an especially well-known band, and
which is weird to, like, it's kind of weird to me that they're not, in a way. I don't know. I just feel like they would be around. Like, people would be aware of them more.
Well, they're kind of a product of their time also, I think.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, they were... Nuclear war is kind of a thing for them.
It could still happen, bro.
Yeah, but, you know, in the 80s, that was... Yeah.
Yeah, that is something that is, like, an area of fascination for me. Just, like, how present that fear was for such a time. And, like, now it's like, yeah, it could still happen.
Well,
but nobody really
gives a fuck. It's not like the threat of nuclear war has gone away. I mean...
I know, but it feels like it has.
Right.
And that's how they're going to get you. Right?
If North Korea ever steps up their game, then...
Those people aren't... They can't do anything. They're a joke over there.
Man, there's real, like, threat of war with, like, Japan and shit right now, man.
With North Korea?
Mm-hmm. That could be interesting.
Yeah, it could be interesting as a spectator sport because we're not over there, so who gives a shit?
Well, you know, if there is, like, a war between Japan and North Korea, we might have to do something.
Do you feel like we learned our lesson?
Well, they're our ally, though. We, like, have to back them up, basically.
No, but we already went to Korea.
Yeah.
My dad was technically involved.
He played basketball the whole time, right?
He did, on Cape Cod. But he's technically a Korean War veteran.
Did he go to Korea?
No. But he'll tell you this, that you don't see any, you didn't see Koreans on Cape Cod on his watch.
Well, tell your dad thank you for his service.
He was a very good guard.
Oh, sure. So Negative Land has done a lot of stuff that I have never listened to. And
like the Over the Head?
Yeah.
I haven't listened to any of that
stuff.
I'm
never going to. But you
I
know,
said Over the Hedge. I meant Over the Edge.
Oh, you said Over the Hedge?
I'm sorry.
Like the movie?
Yeah, exactly like the movie, which I've never seen. That's about a like barnyard, right?
It's not no, it's about animals in suburbia.
What's the barnyard one?
That would be Barnyard.
Oh. No shit.
Yep.
What celebrity voices did that one have?
I don't know. Over the Hedge had a lot, though.
Oh, of course it did. They gotta beef it up.
Had, like, Steve Carell.
Sure.
Fucking some other people.
My mom had a huge crush on Steve Carell for a while there.
You know, it seemed for a little bit like Steve Carell was going to do good movies, and then he didn't.
And then he didn't.
All right.
I thought Big Short was good.
Oh, you saw that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was all right.
I really liked it.
It was a bit, I found it annoying stylistically.
Oh, yeah.
I felt like the subject matter deserved a more sober treatment. Like, I guess, like, I, you know, like, the story is so absurd and bonkers that, like, you have to tell it that way or whatever. But, yeah. Like, I don't know.
I appreciate, because, like, I find that kind of crazy financial shit, like, really interesting, because it's not real, and yet it has such tangible effects.
It's all just numbers.
It's, like, it's all fake.
None of it is
real.
And yet, we can't eat because of it sometimes.
I know, and and also, like, so, I don't know, I just find that subject matter really interesting.
Yeah.
Even though I don't understand a lot of it because I don't understand numbers in any way.
Right.
But, no, I liked it. I thought it was
cool. It wasn't bad. You see the new Linklater joint?
Oh, Everybody Wants Them? Mm. No, I haven't seen it yet. They were playing it at the Nickelodeon Theater in Columbia, and I passed by it, but I didn't have time to go. Mm. Which was lame, because that's a really good theater.
I caught it last weekend.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I loved it, actually.
It seems like I'm going to really like it.
It's a bro comedy, but if you don't
I know it is, but I feel like the way that Linklater approaches, like, human subjects is just something that I always really appreciate. So, like, regardless of who those people are going to be, I think I'm going to really enjoy it because I love Linklater, baby. He was the dude that got me interested in film as, like, a medium that I could, like, analyze and be interested in. So
it's a really good time at the movies. I thought it's really funny, and I don't know. It's just not. It's a good, like, hangout movie. Much like Days. I mean, he called it a spiritual sequel to Days of Confused. And, like,
I don't know what the fuck that means.
Well, I mean, just in terms of, like, just the feel of the movie, it is very similar. It's sort of a hangout movie, washed in nostalgia. Like, takes place over a short period of time.
I don't think Days of Confused is a very nostalgic movie.
You don't?
Not really.
Why do you say that?
Because it doesn't doesn't seem that great. Like, the time period. No, like, the time period. Like, there's no real, like, sunny treatment of the time period. It just kind of feels like windy dressing a little bit.
I disagree. I think,
and they have kind of that, like, you know, like a.
Well, there's that line: "If I ever call these the best days of my life, fucking kill me," or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, and stuff like that. And what's her name? Mrs. Beck. She has that line about, like, you know, like, the '60s were awesome, the '70s are terrible, and so the '80s are going to be radical or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I get that that's kind of like a joke. But it's also, like, that's kind of real about the way that people think about nostalgia and the idea. And, like, the idea that we're looking back on the 70s in this movie and, like, thinking it's cool and they think it's shitty.
Well, like, I don't even necessarily think it's, like, the time period that it's nostalgic for. But it's nostalgic
for youth,
you know, old friends and like, the whole... I mean, it's kind of a feel-good movie. Like, it's a very warm movie.
Yeah, it is. And also, there's that great story of fucking the hot babe, and she has Abraham Lincoln's head. That's my favorite. That's my favorite bit of the whole movie.
Interesting. Like, fucking,
yeah, this totally hot babe, and then she's got Abraham Lincoln's head. I don't know why. It's just really funny. It's absurd.
But anyway, that's enough film chat with Caroline. Let's talk about Escape from Noise. So we're getting to the meteor negative land.
Here we go, baby.
Feel like we didn't do the first few very well, but
nobody likes them. Fuck it.
That's a good attitude. Okay, so Escape from Noise, 1987. I don't know what happened in between the last one and this one, but...
Well, there was quite a time jump, because the last one came out in 83.
Yeah, this is 4 years later.
Yeah, so they're a little bit older.
I guess they had been putting out those over-the-edge things.
If we had listened to them, which we did not...
I don't even know what they are. I just know that they exist, basically.
Yeah, but we may have been able to see, like, their development. Mm. But we didn't listen to those. Even at the height of my Negative Land fandom, I never listened to those because I was like, well, this is auxiliary shit. I don't know.
They just seem inessential in some way, even though I don't know what they are. You know what I mean?
Yep. So this is an SST joint.
Oh yeah.
So they decided, like, you know that Greg Ginn, he was smoking all the reefer and mm-hmm. wanted some different kinds of bands on that roster.
Oh yeah.
So I was like, give Negative Land a call. They're cool. And he was right, and they came out with this, and it's great.
It is great.
It really is great. It's got all that shit. It's got the Nesbitt's Lime Soda song.
That's kind of the anomaly on this album, though.
It is, like,
but in the sense that it's actually a song.
Yeah. It's kind of a beautiful song in a way. It's got, like, this really, like, kind of wistfully sad melody.
Yeah.
It's about soda.
So you mentioned earlier that you think this album does have a theme of sorts.
A loose theme.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that, you know, people will argue that Freak Out by the Mothers of Invention is a concept album.
Right.
Because all the songs are, like, kind of about how America is stupid.
Sure.
Which, that's what every fucking Frank Zappa album is about, because Frank Zappa thought everybody was stupid except him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fuck him. But anyway, yeah. This kind of has a loose theme about American life and...
It's about a lot of things.
It's about a lot of things. It's about when you're trying to watch the Playboy Channel and there's some horrible noise.
Sure.
you know what? I'm sure that's terrible. I grew up in an age of internet pornography, so I don't know what that's like, but I'm sure it's bad.
When I was a kid, we had the Playboy Channel, and it was scrambled. It was like channel 99.
Yeah. I think we did too. Yeah,
you could like turn to it, and like, you know, maybe if you were lucky, it would like slightly unscramble, and you could see some boob a little bit.
Yeah.
Although, like, it was usually like tinted green or some shit. Also, but
yeah,
you know,
then that gives you a complex for the rest of your life.
But you know, when you're 8, like, that's enough. You know.
Yeah, that's
like
kind of...
I saw a boob.
Supposing you're watching the Playboy Channel, and it's just about time for them to have an orgasm, when all of a sudden, wham, the horrible noise comes in and completely destroys your orgasm on the Playboy Channel. There it goes again. That awful interference wrecking your orgasm on the Playboy Channel. You've called the cable TV company 6 times. Each time the technician comes out, he can't fix the problem. Sound is more important than you are. That sound is more important than your entire life. And it will stop you from having an orgasm on the Playboy Channel.
Although, you know, we had HBO also, so sometimes I would catch...
Yeah, that HBO Real Sex.
Exactly. I would catch Real Sex sometimes. Which could be very titillating, but it could also be about, like, 70-year-olds fucking.
Terrifying. Right. I remember, the one I really remember vividly is the one about adult babies.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, which I still find really disturbing.
Because
It's like, you know, like, you can do whatever you want. I'm not sex policing. But I think eroticizing infancy is really, really gross.
I mean, yeah.
Not really. There's,
I think you have to have a complex of some kind to to be into that.
And I remember there was another one that was like this lady who was giving like cunnilingus classes to these like middle-aged people. And it, like, yeah, and she was like licking like half of an orange. I was like, yeah, just get in there. It's like, it's like, why are you teaching a class about this?
It's good training, I suppose.
Yeah, like just if all you're saying is like, yeah, just get in there. It's like, okay, well, you could just do that and not pay for a class on it. I don't know.
So this is an album about American life.
Yeah.
It's an album about media, about consumerism.
Yeah, which kind of all their albums are.
Consumerism is a constant theme in Negative Land, for sure.
And just like the ubiquity of advertising.
Yes, yes.
And the way that advertising, like, I feel like the way that advertisers, like, you use psychology against us and things like that.
Yeah. This is an album about fear, about sort of the constant terror of being alive.
Yeah. Hear that?
It's an album about religion.
Yeah.
Of sort. I mean, between Michael Jackson and Christianity is Stupid.
Which uses, or it might be on Helter Stupid that has the same samples as the God Bullies album Mama Womb Womb, the first song on that album, where it's like, and they said there was something that got to them more than the words of the songs, and it was the beat. I think that's on Helter Stupid, but okay. Like listening to that again, I was like, oh, that's that God Bullies thing.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So I mean, there's a pretty clear satirical point to be made in all of these songs. You have the intro, which presents you with, it's like a message for DJs, and it says it's a song that has been tailored by specific research marketing research to blow up on radio. And it's just this weird, absurd little ditty. Not even a ditty. It doesn't really have a melody, but, you know, it's sort of critical of the vapidity of pop music.
Yeah.
Which
I come back to that quite a bit, too.
Yeah. You know, while we're on the subject of the vapidity of pop music.
Sure.
You know, a lot of people these days say that we're living in a great time for pop music.
Sure.
And I've always been
optimists.
Sure. But like now, especially, we are in a very good point for pop music. And
yeah.
I've always been kind of dubious of this claim.
Yeah.
But I got to tell you, Paige and I have recently been doing this thing where we started on her birthday and we've been listening to the number one singles every week since she was born. And holy shit, pop music was terrible in the late 80s and early 90s.
Right?
Like, it is incredible how bad pop radio was during that time.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, now I get it. Like, yeah, we really are living in a good time for pop music. Like,
yeah.
Today's pop music is 100 times better than it was, you like, know what 25 was, years ago.
You know, it was not, maybe not a great time for pop music, but a really interesting time for pop music was, like, mid-2000s hip-hop.
Yeah.
Because it was so minimal.
That's true. Like, I'm always
like,
struck.
Like, bizarrely so.
Like Laffy Taffy?
That's exactly what I was thinking of.
That's exactly what I thought of when you said that.
That's like the platonic ideal of mid-2000s radio hip-hop for me. Because it's just so, there's like nothing to
right.
it.
It's,
and it's so dumb.
Like three... It's really fucking dumb. I kind of like that song, though.
Yeah, like my friend and I in high school, we had like this whole kind of inside joke about the guy that goes, "Oh my god!" It right in the middle of it.
But anyway, yeah. So pop music, you know, in terms of commercialism, we get the Nesbitt's Lime Soda song. Serving as a precursor to a later album they would put out.
Yeah.
the Playboy Channel commentary on, you know, our oversexed society and the commodification of sex and,
yeah,
and all that sort of thing.
Sure.
I'm very eloquent today.
It is. That is what it's about.
Yellow, black, and rectangular, sort of what I was talking about just the terror of being alive.
Yeah.
Being sort of, you know, they're talking about all these warning signs everywhere.
Right.
But then there's stuff on here that I don't really know what it's going for exactly. Like car bomb, for instance.
Car bomb! don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that would be so perfect on, like, a hardcore record. That scream. Love it.
Sure. And you know, like, Over the Hiccups, for instance, also. Like, I mean, I'm not, like, criticizing it necessarily, because who gives a shit? It's just, it's like a minute of a girl singing somewhere over the rainbow in between hiccups.
Yeah. And it's like a real little kid, like,
so
two or three.
Why did they include that, though?
I don't know. Maybe it was one of their kids.
It's hard to imagine these guys having kids.
Well, people do.
They do?
Yeah, people have children sometimes.
Holy shit.
I know. Who would believe that? But they do.
Probably the most famous song on here, Christianity is Stupid.
Mm-hmm.
which...
A wonderful song.
It's a great song, and it makes me laugh almost every time I listen to it.
I love it so much.
Communism is good! Communism is good!
And it's got that great, like, backing music.
Yeah, yeah. It's actually, yeah, it's one of the songier pieces on here, like, yeah, as far as actually being music and shit. It's this great sort of, like, noisy psych rock track that's backing them. And, you know, they manipulate these vocal samples so that it becomes just more and more disorienting as the track goes on. And, you know, you get that voice that goes like, like, yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Of course I do.
Yeah, like, listening to that shit on headphones is...
It's a time.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. It's a real trip.
Of course. There's also... Do you know how many time zones there are in the Soviet Union? Right. Which Kat is very proud to say that the first time that they listened to this album, they knew that before they said it.
Dude, funny you should mention that, because I was riding back with my brother and my sister-in-law, like, on a road trip, and I was playing this album. And, you know, he started saying that, and my sister-in-law just went, 11! And I was like, damn.
Yeah,
and you know, like, they reveal it later in the song.
Isn't it great to be hanging out with smart people?
Yeah,
it's fun. I was hanging out.
She's really smart. She's a fucking PhD in neuroscience.
Yeah, it's like my friend and I are hanging out this weekend, and she's like smart as fuck. And I was like, man, why are you hanging out with me? I'm dumb. I'm sure I'm fine.
You got a few smarts in your head.
Yeah. Yeah, in between all the, like, rats that are just scurrying around in the vast emptiness of my brain.
Gnawing on your nerves.
Yeah, sure.
What else about this album?
It's really good.
Michael Jackson makes me laugh, actually.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
When he says David Bowie.
Yeah.
That cracks me up.
People do say that, though.
Well, you remember, like, in the mid-2000s, Avril Lavigne, like, introduced him? And
yeah,
called him David Bowie at, like, the MTV Music Video Awards or something like that.
Well, she's Canadian.
That's no excuse.
Well, maybe that's how they say it up there.
No, it's not.
I don't know.
Look, Canadians know how to pronounce Bowie, right?
Okay.
They don't speak that differently from us.
Well, it depends. Some
apart
of them
from
do.
A couple words.
Why are you doing like Dan Aykroyd?
What? I'm doing like Dan Aykroyd?
Yeah, you sounded like you were doing like half a Dan Aykroyd impression.
It was unintentional.
All right, well, I thought it was funny.
You
ever seen Nothing But Trouble?
No. Is that the one with Tim Robbins?
That is the Dan Aykroyd wrote and directed it. It stars Chevy Chase and Demi Moore. They go to this, like, crazy town that uses pre-Magna Carta laws. And it's based... The town is based on Centralia, Pennsylvania, which is this town that's had this underground fire for, like, 60 years, and so it's mainly abandoned. And it's just the most grotesque, like, disgusting, terrible movie.
Huh.
Yeah. It's awful.
You're really selling it.
Yeah, also Digital Underground is in it.
Oh. So it came out in, like, 1990?
91, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, Digital Underground was in it for, like, 2 seconds.
Right.
And that was cool.
The Humpty Dance is your chance to do the hump.
That's a great song. That's a classic.
Do you think this is their best record?
No, I would probably go for the next one.
Interesting. All right, you want to talk about that one?
I do, because there's so much here.
All right, so Helter Stupid. This is an album with a backstory, so you can tell that if you like.
Okay. So, everybody. There was this kid named David Brom who murdered his family in 1988, and Negative Land seized tastelessly upon this opportunity. They had to cancel their tour for, like, some, like, kind of boring reason.
It was financial, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was financial. So then what they decided to do, they released a press release saying that they had to cancel their tour because they were worried that their song Christianity is Stupid influenced this kid to murder his parents. And the news seized upon this without doing any kind of, like, fact-checking or anything. And so they just took all of these recordings of these news stories talking about this as if it was real and just turned it into this incredible sound collage, an incredible critique of, like, you know, 24-hour news culture.
The irresponsibility.
The irresponsibility, yeah. It's great.
Obviously, this is, you said, tasteless.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's tasteless in a big way, but it's also pretty genius in a way, too.
It's extremely genius. Like, you know what?
Huh.
It was tasteless on their part, but the media should have done, like, the most basic possible fact-checking.
They made their fucking point, that's for sure.
Exactly.
I don't necessarily know that this is their best album, just in terms of, like, sitting down and listening to it. But the
like, suite of Helter Stupid is their best work.
I was just going to say, like, it's kind of their masterstroke as satirists, though, because,
yeah,
you know, it's not a passive critique. Like, they literally
went for it.
Yeah, they fed into it. It reminds me a bit of, like, Nathan For You. And
that's a really good comparison.
Yeah, you know the episode with The Movement? Where,
yes.
Yeah, just, like, how quickly he was able to spread this, like, phony workout plan that he had devised just by having a guy that was willing to lie on television and having a media that was desperate for material because they have to have new shit all the time, basically.
Yeah.
And just how quickly he was able to disseminate this totally bogus idea through these channels. Like, it's genius, really. Like, it's genius and it's incredibly telling of, you know, just how all that shit works, basically.
Right.
And so this is kind of a similar thing. I mean, they're not just saying the media is irresponsible and easily manipulable. They're
proving it.
Like, so in a way, it's kind of their biggest success as a band, I would say.
Yeah.
And actually, you might be right that, that the Helter Stupid Suite is the best work they've ever done, maybe. The second half of this album, I'm not as keen on.
I like it more than I did, I will say. I think that it... I think that it's definitely a step down after Helter Stupid, because that's just such a incredible piece of work. Mm-hmm. But I like it more than I did. I think that the, like, the... Yeah, the way that they use samples are interesting. Like, the way that they use that that high note in the song Lovin' You by Minnie Riperton is great.
Right.
So, I'm into it.
So this album, you're sort of getting two distinct suites here.
Yeah.
Side A, you get Helter Stupid, which is yep. where this whole thing that we're talking about happens.
Very stupid. Very stupid. I love that guy.
It's... And as like a bit of sound collage, it's really clever too. You know, they work in all these references to other artists who, you know, supposedly influenced people to commit murders and suicides.
Yeah, like
and just,
Ozzy Osbourne.
Right, right. You know, all the stuff about backmasking and
yeah.
What band was it that, like, got sued because... Was it Judas Priest?
I think it was. Yeah, that got sued because some kid killed themselves.
Right. And, like, if you played the record backwards, it said, do it. Or whatever. And, like...
Yeah, which probably was about, like, casual sex.
Or at most, drugs.
Yeah.
I mean... Right, but they
I remember.
In... Oh, go ahead.
Like in eighth grade, when I was like pretty into Led Zeppelin, I was really interested in backmasking as a concept because it was so reaching so hard, like to find this shit. It's right. all. It's so fake. It's really funny.
Yeah,
it was really funny to me. It's so interesting to me. Like for such a for the power and influence that like evangelical Christianity has in our culture, they really moved away from the whole satanic cult idea.
That's true. Like that was a legitimate fear people had in like
the 80s. It's incredible. It's incredible. Like how people's lives were destroyed based on this completely fake idea that there were these impossible like networks of satanic cults that just wanted to murder kids. Mm-hmm. But it's out there, man. They believed in it.
Mm-hmm. And you know, there's also clips from Helter Skelter spliced in,
which is really well done.
Right. It is, yeah, like it's a really cool effect, and you know it's it splices in Helter Skelter with Christianity is Stupid. So
yeah, and it's not like it's not obviously done at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know it takes clips of the newscasters and like repeats the word stupid like as he's talking and it's really funny how it's done and it's pretty damning. I mean, I'm assuming if you're listening to this, you're aware of the connection between Helter Skelter and Charles Manson.
Sure.
Which, you know, is sort of where the album derives its title from. So it's very, I don't know, it's really funny and clever and biting the way they sort of synthesize all this into this sound collage. I really recommend this album, or at least the first half of it. I think it's pretty brilliant.
It was the kind of murder song that friends and neighbors said didn't make sense.
No one, no matter where he lives or what he does, can be certain who next will suffer from some senseless act of bloodshed.
But that's America.
And yet it goes on and on and on in this country of ours.
That's America.
Now that second one is really Robert Kennedy, right? Wrong.
Hal Eisner.
Wrong. Neither of these is the real voice of anyone, and we must never believe that it is.
Oh, but that was really Robert Kennedy.
Hell,
they are both electronic images of the real voice preserved on magnetic tape. Just as we never see a dead body on television news, we must never believe that we do.
TVs are murdering people every 15 minutes. You see two or three people dying on TV.
Meanwhile, the members of Negative Land are hoping for a speedy conclusion to the Brahms song.
Peace America says it's really frightening, but at the same time, it's ridiculous.
And then you got guys now that got... Yeah.
The second half of the album, Side B, is more vapidity of pop music kind of thing.
Right, which is kind of like... After, yeah, like Helter Stupid is funny, but the statement that it's making is really serious, and it's that irresponsibility. Like we were talking about the satanic cult thing, like that irresponsibility had real material consequences on people's lives, and so after that, to get this like sweet. On pop music,
it's a little it's less important.
Yeah, it does feel less important,
right?
Like I like it. I think seeing them as two distinct like suites, I like it more.
It isn't like I guess I'm not sure why they put them together.
Yeah,
I mean maybe they just didn't have anything to put on side B. So they were like, all right, let's do this.
Sure.
But it's definitely not like of a piece with the first half.
Right.
So the second half kind of consists of
disco.
Basically clips of 70s pop music, disco in particular, along with sort of voice samples of, you know, inane DJs and people talking about the marketing of pop music and and you know, basically it's just a statement about how pop music is making us dumb and
which is like sure.
And it's, you know, mass marketed drivel and all that kind of shit. So you know, I mean, fine.
Yeah.
I don't know if I necessarily buy into all that.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like I think a lot of what they're trying to say there is that like it's absurd how like the marketing, how like marketing departments have such power and influence over music that all the music winds up sounding the same.
Yeah, and it cheapens art and you know.
Yeah, limits. And so I get what they're saying, and I don't completely disagree, but I also think like, you know. You can definitely opt out of that. And I think that the landscape of pop music now is so different.
Sure.
Whereas I feel like the Helter Stupid, I think, is even more relevant now because of internet journalism. And I mean, I kind of wish Negative Land were still around, because like the way that our lives, how we have to censor ourselves constantly, like people getting fired from their jobs because they posted on Facebook, like, oh, I hate my job, like in a moment of frustration, the way that you do, and then they get fired, like that shit's terrifying.
Right.
The way that we have to like market ourselves and just like the fucking crumbling society that we're living in.
You think our society is crumbling?
Well, it's certainly not getting any better.
Well, I mean, in certain ways it is, in certain ways it isn't. I mean,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's sort of what I was talking about before with how Negative Land is very much a band of their time also, because I mean, the climate of news nowadays is so much different.
Right.
It's splintered so much, and there's not really like one news source that everyone kind of gets their news from, you know?
Right.
Like you can.
Well, there is, and it's Facebook.
No, but I mean, like people plug into the ideology of their choice, and they basically trust what those people tell them.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah.
Probably both.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's good that we have more options, but it's definitely harder to validate what is true and what is not true and what is exaggerated in, you know, this sort of weird culture where you can basically post anything you want on the internet.
And it's increasingly hard to, like, have conversations with people because people have, like, closed themselves off. And I'm not saying that I don't do this too, because of course I do. But, like, we close ourselves off so much that, like, it's like we're living on different planets.
Yeah, it's far
easier. When people try to talk about the same thing.
It's far easier to live in a bubble than it used to be, basically.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Side B of Helter Stupid. Moribund music of the 70s.
Yeah.
As the DJ calls it.
Yep.
I guess I see the value of it, but I kind of find it boring, honestly. Like, I definitely don't find it as, like, conceptually rich as the first half, and,
And it's not as much fun to listen to as the first half.
No, it is.
Because the first half, like, you know, we talk about the concept and everything, but it's also just, like, fun to listen to.
Right.
It's really well done, sure. Like, from a...
Just from an artistic point of view.
Right. So, Yeah, it's not just an art piece. Like, it functions well as, like, a piece of music or a piece of, like, audio art.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Definitely check it out. And maybe you'll like Side B more than I do. I don't know.
Or, and if you don't like it the first time, check it out again. Because you might, you might be like me and you might like it more the second time.
So, 2 years later, or no, 1 year later... No, 2 years later, I was right the first time.
Yeah.
Negative Land put out what is probably their most infamous release to date.
And one of their best, I think.
It might actually be my favorite Negative Land release.
It's definitely the one I've listened to the most.
The U2 EP. This thing is amazing.
It is.
I think it's the funniest thing they've ever done.
It really is.
It's like laugh out loud funny, I think. It famously got them sued.
Mm-hmm.
Because U2 is in huge letters and Negative Land is in tiny little letters at the bottom of the cover. Samples, I still haven't found what I'm looking for, pretty directly.
Yep.
Do kids these days know who Casey Kasem is?
I know who he is based upon his bizarrely large presence on Saved by the Bell.
I don't remember that.
He was on Saved by the Bell a lot.
Okay.
But I would say like, I forget that, like, I'm 25, and so, like, teenagers nowadays, they're living in a totally different world than I am. I would say most people my age don't know who Casey Kasem is.
You think? Because, I mean, I remember listening to America's Top 40, though. Like,
oh, yeah?
And hearing Casey Kasem. And if you didn't have that experience, this might not hit home for you in the same way. But... For the youngins in the audience who may not know who Casey Kasem is, well, first of all, he was the voice of Shaggy on Scooby-Doo.
I knew him from that.
But more relevantly, he hosted America's Top 40 every week on the radio, nationally syndicated broadcast. And he's a very jovial speaker. He sounds like a very happy guy, a very enthusiastic guy.
Also, he died, so...
Oh, yeah, he died a couple years ago, I want to say.
Yeah.
Maybe more than a couple, but...
He died 2014.
Okay, yeah.
So, about 2 years ago.
A couple.
Yeah.
I was exactly right.
You were.
And he is featured on this EP because somehow, Negative Land got a hold of tapes of him yelling at coworkers, swearing.
This was a thing that had been passed around, like, by people that pass around, like, stuff like that.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Underground taping communities that existed way back in the day.
Before the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had always wondered, like, where did they find this shit? Like, because it's amazing.
It's
like, because
so
Casey Kasem's sort of, you know, popular persona is this very, like, squeaky clean, sort of happy guy. So it's really weird just to hear him swear at all.
Yeah.
Let alone, like, screaming at his coworkers. But anyway, side A of this record is a hilarious spoken word recitation of I Still Haven't Found What I'm
Done by the Weatherman.
The Weatherman, one of Negative Land's characters. He does the nerdy voice like this. That you
Who sounds a little bit like the Residents.
Yeah, I guess it does.
But just a little bit.
But, like, good. he's the guy talking on the Playboy Channel, if you've heard that song.
Which, if you've heard that song, I would imagine you've heard this too, but...
Alright. So it's a sample of I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For, an instrumental, and the Weatherman sort of reciting it, spoken word, hilariously.
I've kissed it, honey lips. Right. The kissing and the honey lips.
Right. And just the way he says the lyrics makes them sound really stupid.
Which they are.
Oh, they sound a little better with Bono singing them, but...
I guess.
And that stuff is good, and you get a little Casey Kasem at the end. But the real treat is on the flip side, where you get a synthesized Negative Land done cover of sorts of I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. A really, like, hilarious... A really hilarious, like, farty synth version of I Still Haven't Found What
with
I'm
a kazoo.
For. Yeah. And you get Casey Kasem
just going ham on these people. Yeah, like,
sort of introducing songs and breaking them off to yell. Because he
has to dedicate a song to a dog.
He has to read a letter from a fan about his dog that died. And he's clearly not happy about having to do this. What's the dog's name?
They Sprinkles?
Like, no, it's not Sprinkles. It's
Snuffles.
Snuffles, yeah. He's talking about his dog Snuffles. And he's like, do I have to do this out of an up-tempo song? I'm coming out of an up-tempo song and I gotta read about a fucking dog dying?
It's so great.
It is amazing. And it's like, so I kind of don't want to spoil it any more than that because it's one of those you gotta hear it to believe kind of things.
You do also get the most famous line from this album. These guys are from England.
And who gives a shit? Which Negative Land would later reissue this EP with bonus tracks and title it that. These guys are from England and who gives a shit, which is honestly one of the best titles for a record I think I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
What's funny is Casey Kasem knows they're Irish because he even says, like, this song is from four lads from Ireland.
Yeah.
But then he later goes, these guys are from England and who gives a shit. And it's amazing.
He was mad. He was mad. He mixed them up.
Just the phrase, these guys are from England and who gives a shit, is one of the best things that's ever been said by anybody.
I know. Like, it. I wish that, that was, like, on our currency.
Yeah. Kind of the definitive statement on YouTube, if you ask me.
Certainly if you ask me. Although I actually kind of like you too at this point.
Yeah, I love you too. Like I said, I think maybe for younger listeners who don't remember hearing Casey Kasem on the radio, the effect might not be quite as strong.
But it's still funny.
It definitely is. And for those of you that do remember listening to Casey Kasem on the radio, it's...
Or you remember his appearances on Saved by the Bell, when he does his kind of, like, proto behind the music about Zack Attack.
Right. Or even if you've just listened to Shaggy speak on Scooby-Doo, the effect is jarring.
And it is fantastic.
It is hilarious. It might not be fair to say this is the best Negative Land release because... I mean, like, they have gold that they're working with sample-wise. So,
yeah.
Like, you know, honestly, you could just release those samples and, like, it would still be hilarious. But it is probably the release of theirs that I enjoy the most. And,
yeah, like, it's the one I've listened to, like, hundreds of times and never gets old. Which also, it also helps that it's, like, not very long.
Yeah, yeah, it's 13
like it's about
minutes
13
long.
Minutes long.
It got them sued by U2.
No, it got them sued by Island Records, and then U2 were kind of like, yeah, we really didn't have anything to do with that, and we feel bad.
They didn't put any pressure on them to withdraw the suit, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't remember... Somebody linked to it on Mark Prindle's Negative Land page, this, like, long interview between The Edge and Negative Land, actually.
Right, I think that's...
Did you read that?
I think I have read it, but I didn't read it.
If you go on Mark Prindle's Negative Land page, you can find it.
Yeah.
But yeah, like The Edge said, he didn't really know any of this was going on.
Right.
And
exactly.
Like he even said, like, you know, I'll talk to them about it or whatever. But they made a note at the end of the interview, like, we tried calling The Edge again, and he never responded, and his management never responded, and
yeah, he was shooting his guns out on the bayou.
Exactly.
Writing a song about Bono fucking a horse.
Man, that is a callback, Caroline.
I know, but it's... I'm so proud of it. I'm so proud that that happened on our show.
Yeah, we got The Edge to come in and talk to us on the show.
God bless your friend and mine, Harry.
Yes. He managed to get in touch with The Edge.
Yeah. I like that somebody on your RYM page said, bring back that guy, Harold.
Well, that's what I call him, actually, sometimes. I call him Harold. I don't know if I called him that on the show, but that is my nickname for Harry.
Yeah, that's like how I call you Jeffrey sometimes.
Right. But the thing is, like, my name actually is Jeffrey, but his name is is Harry. It's on his, like, license and everything. Like, it's not short for Harold, but I call him Harold because it's funny to me.
It is funny.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they did some shit.
Yeah, I've heard people speculate that Negative Land tried to get sued. But,
yeah.
You know, because sort
to prove a point.
Right, right. Like, they're big on fair use. Like, they've released records specifically about this concept, and I want to say, like, pamphlets and books about it and shit, too.
It's all over their website.
Yeah, like, fair use is a big topic for them.
Yeah.
Do you really do you think there's like a satirical point to the U2 EP, or is it just like they just think this Casey Kasem sample is hilarious, basically?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't really know, like, what I mean, and you know, them like thumbing their nose at U2 also.
Yeah.
But apart from that, I don't know if there's any real like message to this EP.
It's just awesome.
It's great. You owe it to yourself to listen to this.
And more importantly, you owe it to us.
Yeah.
We're your friends of the podcast game.
We only want what's best for you.
Yeah. So, a few years later, about 6 years later, they came out with an album called Dyspepsia. I love this album. Not just because I love Pepsi, which I do, as we all know. Because it's great.
First of all, I should note that I am drinking a tasty glass of Coke Zero right now as we speak.
Sure.
So, anything I say about soda, bear in mind that I am a dedicated soda drinker. As I know you are as well, Caroline.
Oh, yeah. I've tried to quit it. I can't.
It's so hard.
It's so hard.
I love soda so much.
I just love it so much.
It's disgusting.
I know.
Soda is disgusting. It's
Straight up.
It's just sugar and chemicals, and like, it's not even, it's not a drink. Like, it's not like a thing that you should be putting into your body.
But they put it out there for us. And I'm going to drink it.
Yeah.
I wasn't a dedicated drinker of it until I was like 18. But man, my teeth are going downhill.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, they were never great.
That wonderful caramel coloring.
Yeah. Well, cause even in diet soda, like there's like acid in it.
Mm-hmm.
It fucks your teeth right up. Yeah. And my teeth were not good to begin with because I have shitty genetics teeth wise.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time I'm 40, like, I don't even want to think about it. And now I'm a smoker. I'm really not doing myself favors.
Fucked up, bro.
Yeah. But I try. I mean, I brush every day. I floss. But you can't fight it.
So this is an album about soda.
Mm-hmm. More specifically, it is about soda advertising, and it's about the Coke War, the Cola Wars,
mm-hmm.
Which it's not the most timely thing, because they like a large part of this album is about like the new Coke thing, and I guess the idea that was specifically engineered so that they could bring the old Coke back. And everybody would be excited.
Right. Well, I mean, even in 97, that wasn't exactly timely, was it? Because New Coke was like 80s.
That's what I'm saying, that it was not timely.
Oh, I thought you meant like now it's not timely.
No, it wasn't then. Oh. That was my point. But it's really good. The album, I think the samples are great. I really love this album.
Well, it's... I think soda is kind of a good thing to focus on, as if you're trying to sort of critique, you know, American consumer capitalism.
And advertising.
Right.
Definitely.
Because Americans, we drink a shit ton of soda, dude. Like, an absurd amount of soda. And it's a product that has no, like, worth or nutritional value, and it's like basically one of the worst things you can do to your body is drink
it's kind of funny, because like, speaking of somebody that used to have an eating disorder, I always am really heavy on the idea that all food has nutritional value. Yeah. Soda is the one thing where I'm gonna agree with you that it does not.
Yeah,
at all.
Right.
It's got no nutrients in it. It's got nothing good for you. I mean, if you're really skinny and you got to put that weight on and you're sick, like, all right, but it's really not going to help you very much.
Right. And it's literally one of the worst things you can put into your body. I mean,
yeah.
And it's just, it's huge business, and soda kind of,
and it's ubiquitous.
Yeah. And soda kind of represents us overseas also. Like, Coca-Cola is very much like a symbol for America, I think, like all over the world, basically.
Yeah, which I don't think they should be thumbing their noses too hard, because like the collector's market for like limited edition sodas in Japan is massive.
No, I don't even mean that in a bad way necessarily. Just that like it is sort of something that people associate with us around the world. I think
we did invent it.
That we did. So dyspepsy is. Well, it's two things. There are four original jingles.
Yep. Which are really good. Yes, they're all good.
For soda. They are very funny. And I don't know. They're fun, definitely. And then the other tracks are kind of similar to other stuff Negative Land has done. Samples, basically.
Yeah, but the samples are really strong. Like, they're really strong. They're very, like, percussive. Like, they have that Michael J. Fox sample where he's like, I'm me, I'm using this to sell you this, that keeps coming back. Really good.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, using these samples with this kind of musical backing of eerie synth sounds and sort of...
It's very, very eerie. Like, there's I forget what song it's on, but there's that, like, there's that one thing where it's this kind of far off vocal sample of this woman going, "Come alive!" And this really, like, distorted, like, horn shit. That sounds like Nurse with Wound, buddy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I had a point, but I lost it.
Sorry.
It's okay. You say something.
Yeah, and, yeah, why is this commercial? Like, that woman just speeding that up. Why is this commercial? And it just keeps going. Mm-hmm. I just really love the way that they use the samples on this record. Like, mm-hmm. I think that this is one of their strongest works.
I would probably agree with that. Just in terms of, like, focus and coherency, it's definitely, like, a clear statement of purpose, which...
And it's really enjoyable to listen to, for my money.
As far as enjoyability goes, I probably don't enjoy listening to this quite as much as... Helter Stupid or U2 or Escape from Noise, but definitely more than the first couple albums.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to talk about specifics, I guess, because it's just they draw on all kinds of stuff from, like, jingles, from commercials. You know, there's mention of the incident where Michael Jackson set his hair on fire while he was recording a Pepsi commercial.
Yeah.
There's talk about how celebrities play into marketing, how celebrities, just like the appearance of a celebrity's face and voice is an automatic boost to a product.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of really interesting stuff, and, you know, some of it is pretty direct in the message, you know? Like, it's not really any, pussyfooting around about it.
like Frippin' Eno, no pussyfooting.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the song Drink It Up is so good. It's so fucking funny.
Yeah.
It's so, like, absurd.
Cleverly,
like,
incorporating all these different kinds of drinks and...
Yeah, if you haven't heard Drink It Up, it's this little song. It's about a guy where... When he thinks about Pepsi, he's happy, but when he tries other soft drinks, he gets increasingly, like, absurdly depressed. and it's really funny.
And there's The Greatest Taste Around, which is also hilarious.
Yeah.
I'm trying to fucking remember the lyrics to that. There's a line about nailing Jesus to the cross.
Yeah.
Like, Pepsi! it's another thing you kind of just have to hear.
I got fired by my boss, Pepsi.
We have to look great for Pepsi Cola.
I nailed Jesus to the cross, Pepsi.
Well, you gotta pay the price.
Powdered mashed potatoes in the cupboard for 3 years.
My cares not last forever.
Alcoholic husband driving.
Album is so good, and I think it's All She Called About. I think that's the song that has the weird sample that I talked about. That's very, like, eerie sounding, which is kind of interesting in a satirical album about soda advertising.
Right,
like, it's kind of funny, like, because most of it is because of the samples that they're using is very, like, kind of bright sounding.
Yeah.
Kind of crisp sounding. And then, like, you just get this very, like, weird, eerie track in the middle of it.
Sure, and just making it sound sinister.
Like, yeah, which it really is.
Exactly. I mean, soda commercials especially are, like, sort of freakishly happy a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And you think about the reality of, like, what they're advertising. Right. That not only is this shit, like, ruining us from a health perspective, but in terms of, like, the level of waste, in terms of, like, water.
Oh, yeah.
And in terms of, like, there's a Coca-Cola plant in India where, like, people can't have actual, like, drinking water and cooking water and, like, bathing water, but the Coca-Cola plant can have all the water that they fucking want to make Coca-Cola.
Yeah.
And, like, shit like that is so weird and sinister. And then you think about the fact that, you know, they're selling our own water back to us and have this monopoly on water and the water situation in Flint. It's very creepy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all awful.
It's all awful. You can't. And it's just like, you have to just, like, kind of block yourself from it, because if you really thought about how fucked up the world was, like, on the magnitude that it is, like, I don't even know what you would do.
Eh, what are you gonna do, right?
Yeah, you sound like my dad, but it's true. I mean,
I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's kind of true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
it's a good thing Negative Land is around to remind us of that, right?
Well, they're not anymore.
Oh. Are they, like, officially broken up?
I mean, they kind of haven't done anything in a while.
I thought they released something pretty recently.
I don't think so. They released Thigomatic in, like, 2008.
Wikipedia has something called It's All in Your Head from 2014. I don't know what that is, but it's a thing.
Okay. That was like a live thing from a few years ago.
All right.
But yeah. Considering that, like, three of their four core members, like three of their core members have passed away.
How unlucky is that, man?
I know.
Because, I mean,
well, Don Joyce was older. Don Joyce was in his 70s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Ian Allen, I think he died during surgery, and then Richard Lyons had some kind of heart disease or something that he passed away from. So yeah, it's really sad. I miss these people.
I know a guy that saw Mark Hosler. I guess it probably wasn't that recently, but it was in the last, like, 10 years, I think.
Yeah.
So he's kicking.
Sure.
As far as I know.
Well, I'm glad for that.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, got his lecture career. Like, he lectures
about
at different universities. Also, he lives in Asheville.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Well, I'll be damned. We should hang out with him.
Asheville's pretty far away, but yeah.
It's 3 hours from where I live.
Yeah.
Isn't it pretty close to Charlotte?
No.
Oh.
It's like about 3 hours, too.
Well, shit.
But, yeah, we could go there sometime.
Yeah.
Get that sick weed, bruh.
Do you think if we emailed him and we're just like, can we have lunch with you? He would have lunch with us?
No.
Really? You don't think?
I don't know. We did a podcast about your band.
I mean, how often do you think he gets that?
That's a good question, because, like, my initial assumption would be, like, I'm sure he has people talking to him all the time. But, like, of course he doesn't.
He's in fucking
Negative. Yeah, he's in fucking Negative Land. He's not in, like, the Rolling Stones.
He might have lunch with us.
Okay.
Okay, if I emailed Mark Hosler and he said he would have lunch with us, would you have lunch with him?
Sure.
You wouldn't be too intimidated?
No.
All right.
There are people where I would. I don't think I would be too intimidated, so.
Well, you know, they're a pretty impersonal group, like.
Yeah.
And what they do is fairly, like, heady. It's kind of about their ideas more than, like, you know, a deeply personal kind of thing or whatever.
Yeah. So. I'm an ideas man.
Well, I guess that's going to bring us to a close here for Negative Land.
Yeah, we'll keep you updated on this Mark Hosler lunch situation.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, I don't know when I would be able to do it. So
yeah, I
don't want to be
either.
Like, hey, can we have lunch? And then he'll be like, sure. And then it's like, oh, well, I live 3 hours away, so I have
never mind.
I was just seeing if you would. all right. We don't have anything planned for next week, do we?
I don't think so.
So
we'll be doing a different band next week.
Yeah, we did plan that.
To do a different band?
To do a different band.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay. Definitely going to happen. But until then, this has been Our Podcast Could Be Your Life.
And have a good one.
You've got a good beginning. Hit and miss and trial and error. It just depends again on breaking the records over radio.
Rock music blares! Door slam! People yell! Children scream! Sirens wail!